It's time for She Says Art and He Says Science, your weekly hour of edutainment as you learn about the creative interaction between artists and scientists with your host, Jill Dittmeyer, a journalist and arts enthusiast, and Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit. The call-in phone number is 317-788-3314. Now it's time for She Says Art and He Says Science.
Hello, I'm Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and community can create unique interactions and conversations.
And we're doing that today, and we're doing it via Zoom because it's 2020. We're not allowed to get in the studios, but we've still gathered some interesting people to have a conversation with all of us today. In fact, we're going to be talking about the art and science of volunteering, especially during a pandemic. So, Mark, why don't you introduce our guests, and we'll get our conversation started.
Sure. We're excited to have with us Indianapolis-based actor Rob Johansson, who mysteriously and secretively, not really, but on the side, is a premier volunteer for the Indianapolis Humane Society. Welcome, Rob.
Hi,
it's Hi, Rob.
Nice to be with you both. This is great.
And we have Kate Reck, who runs the OTB. We'll have to ask what that is. Studio program for Outside the Box. I guess that's what it is. A day program for adults and developmental disabilities. Hi, Kate.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kate. Good to have you with us again. Well, there's the first question. Let's talk about your day jobs first. And Kate, tell us about Outside the Box, because it's a pretty extraordinary program that's also been affected by the pandemic.
Yeah, Outside the Box is primarily a day program for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Many people aren't familiar with day program or what happens to people with disabilities after they age out of K through 12 public school. But Outside the Box is one of the day program options for folks who might not be able to work full time, or might need some stimulation and daily support and working on skills. So day program is an option. And I had the art studio there. Our art program hasn't in a while, but typically we'll do art shows, which are a great opportunity for community inclusion. So that's a really fun part about my job is getting to do those art shows. And during the pandemic, we're changing things up quite a bit.
Okay,
everybody kind of had to go home, didn't they?
Yeah, we shut down services for safety reasons and started doing some Zoom services back in March.
Kate, how are you doing those Zoom services? I know that's sometimes difficult to pivot from what you were doing before. How did you do that?
So yeah, a lot of our staff and participants are learning a lot of new skills, the folks who are able to do it. It's not accessible for everybody. Not everybody has even the internet connection at home to do that, or the devices at home to do that. But a lot of our staff and participants are learning those new skills. Just earlier today, we did some still life drawings where we took turns setting objects from our homes in front of our computer cameras and drawing those together, things like that, getting to be creative, but we're really missing the hands-on things.
Rob, you fall into the category that's affected so many people in the arts and culture world. Theaters, venues, everything still closed down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had the good fortune of being a full-time actor in Indianapolis for, I think, 24 years, something like that. And, like everybody, this is, unless you have, I don't know how old would you, you'd have to be 102 or 3 to have gone through the last big pandemic, I guess. I know there was a few people that went through the Spanish flu as well. Anyway, most of us, this is our first go round with anything like this, and it affects different people's careers differently. And for the actors in the community, it for the most part shut us down. And you know, it's presented some amazing challenges. I always try to think about the word crisis. In some cultures, it means opportunity. So some days are better than others, but I always try to give myself that idea that, well, this is one heck of an opportunity, and what are we going to make of it? And hopefully we'll never know something like this again.
Yeah, you know, Rob, I think, Rob, for actors, it's particularly tough because generally actors don't have enough income even when they're full-time employed. And the part-time employment they seek are also the things that were shut down. generally, you know, waiting tables or doing things on the side. And that just is, you know, it's just been a double whammy for people in there. Kate, with you, it's, you know, working with people that may need to actually touch something, you know, to be present physically with something. Those are really tough times for both of you with that. So that's why we're going to focus a little bit on the volunteering part.
Yeah.
And let's start with you, Rob. You've been a volunteer, obviously, for a long time.
Yeah, I started at the Humane Society 8.5, something like that, 8 years ago. I've always had a deep, deep love of dogs. I'm more a dog volunteer than a cat person. And I, 6 months in to working here, I was presented with an opportunity. There was a dog that was showing some aggression, and the folks who worked on the behavior team thought that I had a good demeanor to work with the dog, and I it went really well, and that dog found a lovely home, and now what I do full time here is work with dogs that kind of have special needs, either they're shy and fearful. They come to us maybe as strays and haven't had much interaction with human beings. And over time, you gain their trust. And it's, as somebody who loves dogs, being able to build a bridge for an animal that at first comes to us a little bit wild and then winds up trusting and loving humans, that's a really fun way to spend your time. So, yeah.
How do you use your acting skills with those dogs?
Sometimes, that's funny, Jill. Sometimes I pretend I'm not scared. because there have been a couple of instances. I have a dog right now who... two of my special guys here at the shelter, they couldn't be more different. One is a 95-pound German Shepherd who came to us completely feral, just would not let anybody touch him. Very, very challenging case. I went through a lot of time thinking there is no way I could ever interact with this dog, and the folks who work here were like, we really think if you just go very, very slowly, ultimately it'll work out. And now we're very safe. It's not like, you know, hey, just walk into a room with this dog. There was always a barrier between us for the first 6 weeks that I knew this pup, but ultimately I did not lay a hand on this dog for 6 weeks. And that was pre-pandemic, which feels like, you know, 20 years ago. I think it was in December that I met this pup. And fast forward to now, I spend about an hour to an hour and a half every day with this dog. His name is Akila. And we start out, I open his pen and he runs around me and jumps on me like, I missed you so much. And then we go out into the yard and play fetch and work on commands. And then, because someday he's going to get adopted, I wanted him to get used to cars. So then we go for a car ride. And that took about 2 weeks for him to get used to what the heck is this big thing. And now he knows. He knows where I park, and we run towards the car. He jumps in. We go for a car ride. He doggy surfs. Then we go for another walk, and then we have a little playtime, and then I put him in his kennel, and it's lovely. So anyway, that's how I spend my time. And my acting skills, honestly, my fear when I was getting to know him would really rise up, and that's just not constructive for a relationship. So I really tried to imagine that, you know, I imagined Akilah as a puppy, and what that must be like, you know. So happy thoughts, deep breathing. Yoga is a big part of acting for me. So deep breathing, keeping calm and steady in the midst of kind of a storm. That's what I do.
And Caitlin, I remember having a conversation with you, and I think one of the reasons you started volunteering during the pandemic is because you wanted something else to do.
Yeah, at the start of the pandemic, I wasn't sure if I would end up being laid off or, you know, many of our staff are currently furloughed and will probably be for the indefinite future. So during that time, I didn't know, you know, what was going to become of my time. So I started volunteering. I haven't been a regular volunteer. I have always worked two jobs, continue to work two jobs, but I was working with the MLK Center, and they had just kind of done a pop-up meal delivery program for folks at the start of the pandemic. A lot of it was helping to deliver to families who were already receiving IPS free and reduced lunch packages, and so they're not going to school, so they're missing a lot of their meals that they relied on the school for, so helping to get those delivered. They've stopped doing that program, and they're more focusing on helping folks with utilities and making sure that they're able to stay in their homes financially. That program's ended right now.
Why did you select that mode of volunteerism, Kate?
Well, for that specific type of volunteering, it seems pretty safe, and during the pandemic, there's no risk of exposure really to help folks. And I wasn't sure, you know, I didn't want to get anybody sick or get myself sick. So I think that, you know, the way that they set it up, they were very, very entrepreneurial with setting that up. And they were really adapting to the specific situation of this is a pandemic, and they were wearing masks well before, you know, the general public was wearing masks, and they were taking as many precautions as they could to keep their volunteers safe and to keep the families safe that they were delivering to.
So, you know, when I think about it, it's a wonderful thing that you're both doing that, but it would seem to be the opposite of what somebody who's not being able to be employed doing what they would do would be volunteering. But there's obviously something that both of you have discovered in the process of being a volunteer during this time. Can you talk a little bit more about why people should be volunteering and be out, even though it's, you know, a difficult time?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to that. Like, I really liked what Rob said about the word crisis being defined as opportunity in some cultures. I hadn't heard that before, but I think that's descriptive of how I viewed it in wanting to get out and volunteer. So I was volunteering meal delivery, because that's something that I could do. And so if you can do something, then you should. And then also now what I do for volunteering is donating plasma, because I've gotten over COVID. And so that's something that I can do. So, you know, some people say that they're scared of needles. I talk to people about blood donation. Blood donation is something that I've done throughout the years on and off, but being able to donate plasma now that actually could be helping folks. Like if I found out that was an opportunity that I had that I could do, I don't see why I wouldn't. That's just my personal perspective. I'm a pretty healthy person, so I can afford to give these things to you know, take a small risk in doing volunteer work, or to take a small hit to my own personal energy level for the day by giving plasma that week. So those are why I'm making those choices personally.
Kate, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the air, but I think you're a badass. That's awesome.
It's great.
I think you are, Rob. That's amazing that you've been working with dogs that people find big and scary. Like that's a skill that not everybody has, that inner calmness to be able to do that.
Well, that and that 95-pound shepherd is the exception to the rule. They're not all like that. But you know what's funny, Kate? I said to you, look familiar to me. We are kindred spirits because I every 2 weeks am a plasma. Well, I do platelets.
Oh yeah. And, okay. That dog so just jumped on the computer and
different from plasma. Yeah.
My dog, the dog that I'm with,
yeah, just, your dog just muted you.
but a bunch of years ago, a friend of mine who's an actor in town was battling leukemia, and I had happened to donate, and she saw me with the, you know, with the tape around my arm, and she started crying, saying, "You have no idea." It was great to see somebody first and foremost who I'm friends with be affected by that. So I was like, okay, every 2 weeks. Where do you donate, Kate?
I donate at the Indianapolis Blood Center that's on Meridian, like 30th and Meridian.
And that's how I know you. Yep.
So we've seen each other at the Blood Center. Okay.
That's it. Yep.
With
that's
a mask it. On and everything, you must have recognized me. Oh.
See, one of the great things is finding each other and finding other people in different situations. And so, Rob, you're with a whole different set of people that you're there. You've got a lot of animals, but the people you are, and it's the same way, Kate, for you. So it gives you new spheres of people around you.
Jill, go.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think I'm going to say the same thing that probably you are, Rob, and I want you both to talk about that. When I think about your normal jobs, I mean, you both are, it requires a lot of patience, a lot of empathy, and a lot of trust, whether you're an actor on stage or whether you're an art teacher working with developmentally challenged people. So you kind of, your persona is really there for volunteerism.
Can you know, it's funny, I was thinking about, this is such a cool topic and I'm really grateful that you're talking about it. I would imagine volunteering maybe isn't for everyone, but, you know, there's so many ways you can volunteer. And I think what Kate does and what I do, there's a diversity there, but there's a kindred spirit. I think if people really just gave some solid thought towards like what matters to me, what do I like, what do I lean into, they could probably find something to give their time to. And I understand at the time of a pandemic, you have to be very careful. I personally, in the opening weeks of the pandemic, I had two things going on. You know, I'm a very purpose-driven person. Theater had shut down. I was mourning that, but even during theater, I was at the shelter all the time. And I told my wife, I said, if I can't go to the shelter, I'm going to jump off a bridge, you know. And that, I don't think I would have done that. But, you know, I was losing all places of importance. And I thought, I have to have this as much for the dogs as for myself, you know. It's great to have that purpose. And we have taken great pains here to keep things safe. We're not open to the public right now. If somebody wants to adopt a dog or a cat, they go online, they find a pet that they're interested in, they apply, and then they come by appointment only. We can't have just random people coming through browsing. So in that way, we're in a controlled environment and we clean this place, not just because they're dog and cats, but we make sure that we're cleaning door handles and everybody wears masks, you know. So it's a safe environment. But I would think now is a great time for people to think about where they could put their time, you know.
That's interesting that you say that, you know, for people to go volunteer with things that they're passionate about. And, you know, I was thinking about that as a possible challenge that comes with the pandemic right now. My day job, we, in a lot of aspects, we rely on volunteers to strengthen our program. And, well, we welcome volunteers to strengthen our program. And for our events, we rely on volunteers to make them happen smoothly. And events aren't happening right now, and many nonprofits are not welcoming outsiders right now just to limit the exposure for the people who have to be in that building. So that my day job falls into that category where we are on a very diminished capacity right now, and we're not allowing volunteers to come in. So volunteering could look really different right now, but there could still be opportunities. There might be something. If you want to be in the safety of their own home, it could be something like data entry that maybe you have a skill in and you could help in that way. But these hands-on volunteer opportunities, I think, are interesting in some of the, as far as some of the opportunities currently.
I think you're absolutely right, Kate. One of the things in running a small nonprofit myself that people don't think about is as we changed and pivoted to doing more online stuff, there is a whole lot of work that needs to be done that we're not going to be able to hire now. And it's not what we did before, because we were building sculptures or we were doing, you know, theater outside or something, but we don't do that, but we do it online and we do other things online. That takes a huge amount of skill base that we don't currently have and aren't in a financial position to hire. So I think there's lots of organizations, if you look at them on the outside, you might think, well, maybe Newfields doesn't, you know, need volunteers because they don't have as many people. But I bet you if you ask the institution, how can I be helpful, rather than come with what you'd like to do, I bet you that there's, 101 different jobs that can be done even from at home or with limited contact. So find reaching out is important.
Yeah. And for both of the organizations that you are volunteering with and with OTB, specifically for you, Kate, volunteers are a really critical part of your operation. And if you guys talk a little bit about that, how important it is to have volunteers for an organization.
Yeah, for the organization that I work with, volunteers who come to our day program are just, you know, such a great way to like supplement by bringing people's passions. So for example, right now the volunteers that we're missing are folks who would come in and lead our adaptive yoga. You know, I led chair yoga the other day outside with us 6 feet apart wearing masks, and I just ran out of ideas at some point because yoga and adaptive yoga, that's not my expertise. And so, you know, we're missing out on some of those really cool things. I mean, possibly we could connect with those folks on Zoom, and that, you know, just kind of accepting the reality that moving forward, things are going to be like this for a while. So maybe we do need to get a little creative about how we can continue to have those awesome supplements from our volunteers. But we're missing our volunteer yoga instructors who we love having. There were people who would come in for pop-ups, like to do sewing workshops or writing workshops for our folks, which are just amazing assets that we can't currently do or host in person. So those are things that we're missing from our community, and connections are missing from our community right now with the barrier that COVID has created.
And that social interaction, which is very important for your clients and day guests as well.
Absolutely. The social piece is not the same right now. And there are some folks who are falling through the cracks with not being safe to come in or not having the ability sensory-wise to keep a mask on their face for the full time of the program, or possibly, you know, being a high health risk, but not having access to internet or technology to reach us on Zoom. So yeah, there's a handful of barriers to that social interaction that we're missing right now.
And Rob, I know for the Humane Society, I mean, one of their biggest fundraisers, the Mud Strip, boy, that relies on so many volunteers.
Oh gosh, yeah. And you know, Kate, you made a really good point by kindly contradicting my point. The Humane Society, when the pandemic hit, we were worried that we were gonna have to completely shut down. And the problem is that there are beings here that have to be cared for.
Right.
So what, in the bleakest time, which lasted, I'd say about 2 months, the opening 2 months of the pandemic, we went from, I don't even know how large a staff we have here, paid staff. I think the paid staff is probably, let's say 40 to 50 people. And the volunteer staff, we had like 240, 250 volunteers lending their time. We went from that to about 10 employees and 6 volunteers. That's for every hour of every day, taking care of the business of the organization and the animals. The good thing that happened, a lot of people, because they were stuck at home, wanted, this was a prime time to adopt a dog.
Exactly.
Some time to foster an animal. They, you know, with the idea, maybe I'll take care of this dog forever, but at least through the pandemic. So our numbers, the shelter normally can house over 250 animals. I think the smallest number we had at one point for about 4 days, I think we had 8 dogs here and a few cats, and that was it. Now we're back up to a more robust number of dogs and cats that we're taking care of. But the problem is there's still a lot of volunteers that are a little worried about coming out. So we try to gently remind everybody that we're taking safety precautions. But we still have, it's a core group of volunteers. Now we're probably up to about 30 volunteers. But there's a core of us that are still here. I'm here 6, sometimes 7 days a week. And the crazy thing is, some of us are going to have to start going back to work again. So we're trying to grapple with that. Because these animals rely on volunteers. A lot of them spend 22, 23 hours a day in a kennel, and the only time they get human contact is when the behavior team or us are working with them. So,
yeah, so I was going to ask exactly that, was which Rob, you were just talking about, and that's the idea. Do you think, though, that a part of this will last even when people go back to work? Because you were doing it before and you were pretty hooked, but people may have a new experience doing it, like Kate. Do you think that people will continue to, they can't do it at the level they were doing it, but can they, do you think it will change them in a way that the volunteerism becomes important again?
I'll jump in first. You know, the greatest gift, I've never gone on unemployment before, and I wrestled with it, and I decided I have to. There's, you know, show me a theater that's performing. And actually, I think the Fonseca Theater at least did a partial run of a show, but IRT, where I work, and the Phoenix are shut down. The best thing, I decided I'm gonna eat humble pie or feel, you know, oh boy, I didn't feel great about applying for unemployment, but I have always wanted to do what I do at the Humane Society as a full-time career. I've wanted to split myself and act some of the time and be here some of the time. And this is, like I said, it's an opportunity. I made this my full-time job, and I could not be, there's ways I couldn't be happier. And there's a part of me that has a little bit of dread of the theater world opening back up, because I love being here. I absolutely love it. And what's better, you know, Kate bringing somebody a meal who desperately needs it, coming into a shelter and seeing a being light up because they know you're going to take care of them, and they've been just sitting and waiting. That's a good feeling. And building a bridge, the best feeling is when a dog goes home that you've been working with for months. and they go home and you know they've made it. It's the greatest thing in the world. I love acting and I'm excited to go back to it, but this is a very particular, a particularly wonderful and unique feeling. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, we are talking about the art and science of volunteering today, and we're speaking with Rob Johansson and Kate Rank. And we want to remind you that our program is made possible by the generosity of an anonymous donor who supports the Da Vinci Pursuit's mission of creating a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and the community can come together for unique activities and conversations. And we're going to continue ours in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Tony Morris. Join me for an hour of some of the best music for guitar on Classical Guitar Alive. Each week we explore a wide variety of music with guitar, and you'll also hear interviews with many of the world's foremost performers and composers. That's each week on Classical Guitar Alive.
Saturday mornings at 5 on WICR, The Diamond.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
Dave Bagdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
And welcome back. We're talking about the art and science of volunteering during COVID. And Kate, one thing you mentioned that I don't want to ignore is the fact that your second volunteering job is giving plasma because you had COVID. What was that like?
I had COVID pretty early on in the shutdown. Both of my workplaces had already shut down, and I was having what I thought were allergy symptoms and then turned into flu-like symptoms. And at the time, the only sort of medical care that I wanted, since I did not have any difficulty breathing, the only sort of medical care I got at the time was to call into a nurse line and follow the advice to just stay at home and quarantine myself. It really did just feel very similar to having the flu, and I had really sore ribs, which were probably from my lungs being inflamed. But I was pretty sick for a couple of weeks and had a lot of fatigue symptoms that were lingering and was kind of bedridden for about 3 days during that time. But I isolated really well, and I did not end up getting a confirmed COVID test at the time. And it wasn't until later that I found out that you can get an antibody test and then confirm that with the blood center to give plasma. So that was what I chose to do. The main reason that I wanted to know for sure if it was COVID was to, you know, see if there's any sort of chance for immunity, then I would feel better about going back to my night job, which is at a bar. I work at a tiki bar part-time in the evenings. And I know that could be potentially more risk than going back to my day job, and I could potentially be bringing something to the at-risk people that I serve at Outside the Box. So it was a hard decision to make, and I wanted to know for sure that I had a lesser likelihood of getting my folks sick. So that was one of the reasons that I wanted to get tested. I also wanted to be able to give plasma. Pretty important to know.
You bring up a really good point. One of the good things about that's another volunteer kind of thing. By being able to go give the plasma, people need to give blood during this time. The blood banks are down. They didn't need it as much for a while, but now their elective surgeries are back up, which means that there is a real need. So people, again, back to our earlier thing, where would there be volunteer ideas? Well, even if you have some sort of illness and you're over it, you can give plasma, even if you couldn't give blood. And so it's a really interesting idea to be able to do that. And so again, what will be helpful to people that are listening is this idea that you can go and ask an organization you really have cared about, or something like Rob, where you always have wanted to do something with something like that with animals, and ask them what do they need right now? What can you do?
Hey, Kate, do you still have the antibodies?
I do. Last that I was tested, I've been tested a couple times by the blood center, and they still say that it's convalescent plasma, which means that it can be used to treat others.
That is so great. And it's funny, I'm a little jealous of that. Every time I go in to our blood center, I ask them, I'm like, you know, are you testing? Because I haven't been, you know, tested yet for, I haven't exhibited symptoms, so I guess I have no reason to be tested. But going to give blood, I wish that they had a test so that they, if I was one of the asymptomatic people, maybe my plasma could be used like yours is being used, you know?
Right. It seems to me, I don't know for sure, but it seems based on what I was told that it may take a lot of resources for them to do that test for the antibody, because I had to have a doctor's note confirming that I had had COVID previously, and that was just to get me in the door for that, the convalescent plasma donation, for them to even do their test. So they wouldn't run their antibody test unless they had strong evidence that you likely did have the antibodies. And I'm assuming, that's just an assumption on my part, like maybe it takes a lot of resources to do.
I bet you're right. I it's probably money. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the reliability is not quite there yet for the antibodies test. I don't think there's enough of them, and some of them are more accurate than others, and it is more costly to produce those. But it goes back to that same thing of finding a way to volunteer to give back that way. And I know with blood donation, a lot of people are kind of put off by that. But obviously, I mean, Rob, it's something you're used to doing, and I'm sure they're making it very safe for people right now as well, too.
Oh, absolutely. You walk into the shelter. You walk into the blood donation location where Kate and I do the 34th and Meridian one. The first thing you're met with, they take your temperature. They ask you how, you know, do you have any, have you exhibited any symptoms? And I think most people by now, especially if you're going to go donate, you're trying to give something of yourself to somebody else. The last thing you would ever want to do is be ill during that time, because you're donating your plasma or blood or platelets, what have you, your double red cells, and you want to make sure that you're giving a healthy product to somebody who's compromised, obviously. So I would imagine, I would hope anybody out there who has a trepidation about blood donation because of the pandemic, just think about, you know, everybody who's going there, I would think is going there with the belief they are healthy and everybody's in a mask, and think about it. It's a medical place. They are cleaning everything all the time.
Right. It could be one of the safest places in town. Yeah. You know, Rob, let's talk a little bit about kids volunteering, because I know the Humane Society, dogs and animals, that's a big thing for kids. How has the pandemic affected your young volunteers there?
Well, they were gone for a long, long while, and I guess it was about 3 months. But and because we have kids that come in with their parents to lay hands on puppies and kittens, not so much the adult dogs, but it's important for several reasons, because it teaches young children to not be afraid. You know, there's some people that go through life just terrified of domesticated animals, maybe because of one bad incident or because of what they were told, you know. So we have kids come and lay their hands on young puppies, and it's great. And it also helps the puppies learn the human touch from a very early age. So that has started back up again. And no child ever comes in unattended, obviously. It's always with a parent. So that has started up again. And it's the great thing. We also have, we have autistic children come in who benefit greatly from the comfort of loving on a small animal. And again, the animal benefits from that as well. So we've opened that up again, but in small forms. I believe no more than three parent-child combinations can be in the shelter at one time. We're trying to keep our numbers regulated in that way.
You know, Rob, one of the things that, and it's really important, but I've mentioned it before on our show, and that's that there are three components to people's human health. And one is their medical health, which you were talking about, you know, making sure that you have that. Kate, you know, the same things as, you know, are you sick or those things. But the two that get missed by our healthcare system and by really our government responses are the social and emotional. And overall health is dependent on all three being in balance. And so what you guys are talking about by going out and volunteering is trying to get that social emotional in balance as well, which increases your overall health and well-being.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's something I definitely feel like I am able to get from my day job and working directly with individuals with disabilities. But talking about, you know, a symbiotic relationship to positive emotional health, that's absolutely the way that I feel about my day job and the work that I do with Outside the Box, and you know, develop really strong connections with those folks. And you know, I think Rob was talking a little bit about building relationship, that there's different types of volunteering. And I think that the type of volunteering that, you know, builds relationship with the same individuals, whether it be a person or a pet, I think that those can be really extra special, because it's something that really, you know, lasts and builds a memory for you and lasts for a long time.
And Kate, since you haven't been able to work until recently, like one-on-one with your clients and such, just doing Zoom and that kind of thing, does that physical act of going and being able to donate your plasma, does that help kind of with those feelings that you would normally be getting, knowing that you're like actually physically with someone helping them with their art and that kind of thing?
You know, for donation of plasma, that's kind of like an abstract way of giving. I do, you know, I have my best friend is a nurse, and she has told me an anecdotal stories about people who have gotten treatment through plasma for COVID, and you know, just being a part of that feels good that I'm able to do that. You know, a little bit earlier, Mark had asked a question about, you know, do we think that for us individually or for other people who are giving in some way during this pandemic, if that's something that will carry on? I do believe that I'll continue giving blood or blood products at the blood center, making that part of my life. And I also think that part of the reason that's possible is because there's a little bit more flexibility in my schedule due to the way that things have gotten jumbled up and then having to be rebuilt with the pandemic. And I think a lot of people are in a similar situation with their work schedule and being able to find time to build volunteerism into their work if they're not in Rob's situation where he has built that into his life as a very regular thing. The opportunity for rebuilding your schedule is there, and if volunteering is something that sticks with you, then it's possible to carry that on as you kind of rebuild your life post COVID.
And I'm wondering if, like, the organizations are looking at that differently too, Rob. So now that they've had you go from 200 volunteers to 6, are they coming up with a new plan for when things get back to whatever the new normal is, of incorporating their volunteers? Are you finding new ways and better ways to use volunteers?
I think one of the opportunities that's been presented to the Humane Society is we got so many more dogs fostered in this time than we normally did. And I think part of it is families had more time, but I think we were a bit more front-footed of going, you know, we don't have the staff right now. We've got to find a way to take care of these dogs. Well, look, I love my work here so much in ways more than anything, but do I really want a dog to be in a kennel? No. It's like, Kate, it's funny you're talking about your yoga instructors and how important it is to have them for the people you take care of. I've heard like good therapists and good yoga instructors say, well, my ultimate goal is to be obsolete where, somebody practices so well that they don't maybe need me. And I think about that, wouldn't it be lovely if no animal needed to be in a kennel? And look, unfortunately, that probably won't ever happen. But we are being more front-footed about going, how can we just get these animals into homes? So we're learning, we're sometimes making mistakes, sometimes we get a little too ambitious with putting an animal in a home before we've figured out what the best marriage is for this animal and what home. But I would say our success ratio for fostering has skyrocketed, overall has skyrocketed since the pandemic. And that's something I think we want to continue with. Once we have a vaccine or Kate gives out all her antibodies and we're all cured, once we're past the pandemic, I'm really hopeful that we'll keep more dogs out of the shelter than in the shelter. Yeah.
Kate, have you been able to encourage your friends to volunteer during the pandemic time? Doing just any kind of volunteering? Because I know you really, when you were doing the MLK program, you were really enjoying that.
Yeah, I was able, I think that helped with my roommate at the time who has since moved to Chicago during the pandemic, which has been a whole other story, moved with their partner to Chicago, but they were laid off and, feeling pretty down, and I invited them to volunteer a couple of times with me, and I think that was really a big pick-me-up for them, and also they are immunocompromised, so that was a safe way for them to be able to be productive and be giving during that time. And they told me that they are looking for opportunities in Chicago to be volunteering. So, I think that just remembering that feeling productive in any way during a time when you're feeling kind of lost, that's definitely a positive thing. Just like Mark had mentioned, for your social and emotional health to be giving. A lot of people, the only social or the majority of social interactions that I'm having right now, I'm not hanging out with my friends. It feels irresponsible to do so, but I am seeing my coworkers because I have to. And so that's, the only social opportunities we get. And so volunteering could be that for some folks who are laid off right now or who are furloughed.
That's funny. I want to jump in, Kate. One of the coolest things about donating I mean, it's great. The coworkers, co-volunteers that I work with at the shelter, I have deep friendships with them now. But and also going to the blood center, a couple of weeks ago, I've been donating there for a long, long while. A woman who was one of the managers there, I'm sure I can say her first name. It's Linda. It's fine. I've known her for years, and she retired. And I was one of her last sticks, you know. And it was really moving to me to go, my gosh, I've known her and had lovely conversations with her for a few decades, and it's the end of that era, you know. But beyond her, there's so many people that you recognize at the blood center, and the fact that everybody's there for that purpose, it just is. It's a great way to make friends, or maybe you don't want to use the word friends, but great acquaintances, you know.
Well, and for you, Rob, now this is the flip to the question I asked you earlier. Do you take your volunteer experiences back in with you when you act, when you're given a certain role? Do you recall that feeling that you had with her or with the dogs or anything like that?
Oh, now you want acting secrets. Like, what do I think of stuff like that? You know,
one of the best, so we know you have the best.
I will share with you that one of my biggest regrets is that I never had a kid. Because I come from a really big family. I've got, I'm the last of seven kids. I have 16 nieces and nephews, and I'm the only one that didn't have one myself. So I think I've put a lot of that maternal care, or what do you say, fatherly love towards animals. So I've played Bob Cratchit more times than I can count. So yeah, besides falling in love with my tiny Tims, who are humans, there have been plenty of years that I have channeled my love for dogs that I have known or do know, and build a bridge towards my tiny Tims, you know. So I hope nobody's offended by that, but I would imagine if anybody has love for animals, they know it runs, they're members of the family, you know.
Yeah.
So that would be, that's one way, one bridge that has been built. And also, acting is supposed to be a very generous art form, you know. You are there to serve the story and there to commune with an audience. And when I come here, I hope I'm here to serve the animals and to be constantly searching what they need. And every animal is unique, and you have to stay open and not think that you already have the answer in your back pocket. So that definitely keeps my instincts, my inquisitiveness fresh. And that definitely helps. I know my acting has been aided by my volunteerism, definitely.
And Kate, I mean, with your job, you create community every day with the participants at OTB. I would think that it's this enrichment that just continues when you volunteer and vice versa.
Yeah, to be a part of multiple communities is something that's valuable to me and important to me. And also to have things to share with the people from both circles about, you know, the other parts of my life that involve giving. Like I feel like my day job is a lot of, you give a lot of put a lot of energy into the interactions that you have. And you know, while I feel like I'm physically giving my energy when I go to give plasma, I'm literally giving my energy when I go to give plasma. So I think that the two can tie into one another.
Well, this has been really interesting, you guys, and we really appreciate the time that you've given us and given our listeners a lot of hints and a lot of things to think about, to not be afraid, to go out there and volunteer in any way that you can. And to we appreciate you for your volunteerism as well, too. We probably people don't thank you enough for the volunteer work that you're doing. So we thank you as well. So we do want to thank our guests, Rob Johansson and Kate Rank, for joining us today.
And you'll find pictures of Rob and Kate and other guests on our website, thedaVinciPursuit.com, where we create museums without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can come together to enjoy unique activities and conversations.
Until our next conversation, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to
stay curious. Curious.
Thank you for listening to She Says Art and He Says Science. You can listen to the full show podcast on wicronline.org, as well as on thedaVinciPursuit.com. Or you could join Jill Dittmeyer and Mark Kiesling every Saturday live on a different kind of public radio, 88.7 WICR.